This is All Sweet Things Beyond, a Ted Lasso fic, written by and Ask Why Not, and read by KLB. Chapter 1. Cake. And it's go time. Rebecca, Trent, let's make the magic happen. The air is already sticky. It's only 7:30, but Trent can already feel the humidity and sugar on his skin, and they haven't even started filming, not properly at least. Last summer, during the first season, when he'd been a novice at filming outside, he'd worn a blazer to each day of taping, because that was part of his look, what people expected from Trent Crim, former food columnist for The Independent, current number one best-selling cookbook author, and had promptly soaked it through with sweat. By week 5, he'd been so fed up with the whole thing that he'd shrugged it off right before filming had started. He doesn't even need to look over to his right to know that Rebecca Welton is utterly poised, not a hair out of place. He has never seen her sweat, not even when Piers Morgan asked her why her newest book had so many Italian recipes, didn't she think she was betraying her British roots? There's a reason why Trent hasn't been asked to go back on Good Morning Britain in quite some months. Keely Jones is literally bouncing as they make the walk to where the bakers are. If she isn't careful, that ponytail of hers will put someone's eye out. It won't be Trent's. And then, the cameras are on them. Keely and Beard exchange their banter, something about multiple Fs that he'd roll his eyes at if he were paying attention. Cake Week is Rebecca's specialty, after all. Everyone knows that. You don't get asked to make the wedding cake for not one, not two, but three different members of the royal family without being good at it. And fruitcake? What was Higgins thinking, leading off with that? Even if it is a challenge in terms of baking time, they'll be lucky to keep half the viewership of last season. The introduction wraps up. Trent gets pulled to do his first round of talking heads. Rebecca does her talking heads. And then, it's time for the first walkthrough. It's the walkthroughs that made Trent a household name. He'd laugh at anyone, his mother, his agent, fucking Rory, who says that, but it is true. There are rules to the walkthrough. They can ask the baker for more details about what they're making. They can ask about ingredients and techniques. They cannot give advice or their opinions about how it'll turn out. Trent initially found it difficult to not tell an amateur the exact reasons for why what they had planned for a Swiss roll would fail. He learned to resort to an eyebrow raise instead. It turns out, audiences enjoyed that. A lot. They start with Roy Kent. Trent remembers him from filming promo material. Hard not to with that scowl and those eyebrows. He is zesting a lemon as if it personally offended him. Trent waits for Rebecca to speak. They realized early on last season that the bakers open up more to her, something to do with her blue eyes and big, shark-like smile. Rebecca waits for Trent. She, too, recognizes a baker who is not in the mood to talk. Cameras be damned. Hiya, Roy! Keely, it seems, has no such qualms. So, tell us what you're making, yeah? He lets out a grunt. They wait for more details. Nothing. So, the lemon? Is that for the topping or... the base? Keely's smile hasn't cracked. Why the loaf pan? Trent asks, just to put Keely out of her misery. The depth could lead to raw sections. Hasn't been a problem yet. And the coconut can dry out the batter. You've got to compensate for that somehow. Thought that would work, and it did when I tried it at home. Well, that's certainly an answer. Trent normally would push a bit further, but he doesn't feel entirely comfortable about the way Roy is holding that zester. The next few bakers go smoothly enough. Colin gestures a bit too much and almost splatters lemon curd over Beard. It takes Will a few tries, but he manages to explain his vision of a mango and orange cake with Keeley's gentle urging. Trent is not convinced about Rupert's pear and rose sandwich cake, but that is exactly the sort of thing that Rebecca has liked in the past. They reach the third bench on the left side. Ted Lasso. The American, Trent remembers being surprised that would be allowed, is bent over a bowl, but he straightens when they approach. There is a splash of something brown. Nutmeg, maybe, across his apron. "How can I help y'all?" he asks, before either Keeley or Rebecca can begin. "Wait, you have to try this." He holds out the bowl. Trent has never had a baker straight up offer him a mixing bowl during a walkthrough. Maybe a syrup they were using, or a sample of a particularly inventive spice combination. But not raw batter. "Spiced cake with apple and cranberry and just the slightest hint of candy ginger for a little bit of a kick." "Oh my God, Ted!" It seems like Keeley's taken him up on the offer. "This is fucking..." Someone, no doubt Higgins, clears their throat. "This is amazing." Keeley whips around to face them. Trent just avoids her hair. "Sorry, Ted. I'm going to have to eat all of this. Goodbye, hips." "Are you just using the candied ginger?" Trent asks. Keeley hasn't let go of the bowl. "Yes, sir. Wouldn't want to overwhelm the cloves."
"And you're leaving them whole?"
"Cutting them to the same size as the cranberries, and making sure that the apples are the same size as those as well."
"And how does that impact the flavor, using a mix of fresh and dried fruit?" Rebecca interjects.
Ted shrugs and pops a cranberry into his mouth. Trent has never seen a contestant respond that way, be so nonchalant.
Has the man forgotten it's a competition?
"Haven't had any complaints yet. Cranberry?"
"No, thank you."
"You sure? They're from Wisconsin."
They stay at Ted's workstation for a few more minutes. Trent asks him why fresh apples, why not a mix of dried as well, and Ted actually thanks him, says he'll have to try that next time. And then Jan, the AD, is gesturing at them to wrap it up. Keeley releases the bowl of batter with a pout, and they head over to the next target. For the rest of the walkthrough, Trent finds himself wanting to go back to the third bench on the left and just explain to the American standing there why cutting the fresh apples and candied ginger to the same size as the dried cranberries is a terrible idea. He restrains himself. There are no major surprises in the first round of judging. Nate's chai, apricot, and mango cake is as close to flawless as they come, and when he says so, the other man flushes and looks everywhere but at the cameras. Florence's, because Trent is not calling a woman sassy, apple cake is also solid, if uninspired. Roy's cake is not raw, and when Rebecca congratulates him on the bake, his mouth moves a centimeter toward a smile. Sam's cake has a perfect structure and spent just 2 minutes too long in the oven. Colin's lemon curd is just a hint too sour. The fruit in Jamie's rhubarb and almond cake is well integrated, and the texture is flawless. Shannon's spice cake is completely average. Jane's rum and orange cake has too much baking soda. May's bonfire apple and ginger cake has a magnificent crust to it. Will's is overbaked. Rupert's rose and pear cake is more rose than any real flavor. Trent can't taste any apple in Ted's cake. All the ginger has dropped to the bottom as well. It is perfectly baked. Doing pineapple upside down cake for the blind bake was Trent's idea, and he's proud of it. It's a mean first challenge. He doubts more than two of the bakers have eaten it before, let alone made it. But isn't that the point? testing their reflexes and all that. We're going to have to try 13 of these. Oh, yes, and there's the fact that Rebecca despises pineapple. That little fact definitely did not figure into Trent's recommendation at all. It's only a bite of each. She makes a face and pours herself a cup of tea. What do we think of them? She asks. One of the production assistants is still setting up the camera, and Trent allows himself to ponder Rebecca's question. In theory, they'd already met the new bakers last week, when they filmed promo material, although said meeting was brief, just enough for handshakes and an exchange of names. And, unlike Keeley and Beard, he and Rebecca were given next to no information about each baker beyond their name to prevent accusations of bias. Last season, Trent had been insulted by the very idea that knowing a contestant's hometown or job would cause him to change his opinion on their crumb structure. But then their best bread baker had made a comment about loving an appearance Trent had done back in 2012, and he decided that the less he knew, the better. This season's batch is younger than last's. Shannon looks young enough to not even have finished her A-levels, and four of the guys, Will, Jamie, Sam, Colin, all look like they should be in university tutorials, not out in the tent. Trent has a feeling he's going to feel ancient before they're done filming. He knows that age is no judge of anything, and that he should expect the unexpected and all that. That's the whole point of the show, why it had dominated the ratings last year, but he's already feeling a little skeptical. After all, one contestant seems cheerfully nonchalant. Too soon to get a sense of frontrunners, is all he tells her, because it's true. Rebecca lets out a noise of agreement. That coconut cake was a nice surprise. I was worried that if it didn't turn out, that Roy Kent would stab a dishwasher. Neither of them speak for a few minutes, considering that possibility. It's a shame, Rebecca says at last, about the American, Ted. It was a good idea in theory. It's Trent's turn to make an agreeing noise. Not what I was expecting, Rebecca continues. For an American, that is. Were you expecting Chance of USA? With that mustache? Yes. Trent hadn't had any particular expectations. He'd had the unfortunate experience of having to co-host a 10-minute spot with Bobby Flay several months back. But the cameras are set up, and it was time for them to pretend to enjoy a slice of cold pineapple upside-down cake and recite the pre-written bit about avoiding an overly dense bake. Another thing that Trent hadn't missed about the first rounds of the competition is that none of the bakers had a poker face. It was hard to do a blind taste test when it was so obvious whose cake you were tasting. With the very first one, as soon as Rebecca had said, "Good caramelization," Colin had let out an audible gasp. And then, when they had agreed that one was close to raw, four of the bakers had looked over at Florence. The third to last one was, frankly, a mess. The middle had collapsed, and the cherries had somehow sunk towards the bottom. Trent had let Rebecca take a bite of it first. When she didn't immediately spit it out, he took a small piece. Not as bad as I thought it would be. How did you manage to get it so moist? Everyone laughs but Ted. The nearly raw cake, Florence's, comes in last, but it's a near thing. Ted's cake, the one that's collapsed in the middle, is 12th. These things happen, don't they? It's a shame. I thought Pineapple and I were pals, is all Ted says to the news. He beams when Colin's cake takes the top spot. Looks so happy, it's as if he won. It's not that Trent dislikes Ted Lasso. He does not. He does not dislike contestants. That would be unprofessional, and Trent has always prided himself in being an utter professional. It's just that he takes the show seriously. Even if when Lucy, his agent, had first pitched the whole thing to him, he had laughed at the thought. And the fact that Ted seems utterly unconcerned about his performance is a slap in the face to the whole premise. It's frustrating. Trent's aware of how many people apply for the show, so why choose someone who seems so determined to treat it casually? Even now, as he, Rebecca, and Beard approach to ask him about his take on the Skills Showcase Challenge, Trent maintains it's a stupid name, Ted's deep in conversation with Sam, as opposed to working on his mini birthday cakes. Rebecca clears her throat. Ted turns. Sorry about that. Important conference about why the heck you'd ruin a good cake by putting matcha in it. So it's not going in your cake, Beard says, flat as ever. Of course not. Ted sounds almost hurt at the suggestion. Why don't you tell us about your flavors, then? Rebecca is good at getting things back on target. 2 tiers of chocolate cake, with alternating levels of peanut butter buttercream and mixed berry buttercream. Peanut butter? Well, when I think birthday cake, I think about going to birthday parties as a kid. There was this one kid in my second grade class, Kenny Miller, and his mom would do these ice cream cakes from scratch, which was a big deal in Leawood in 1985. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches were what we usually had at those parties, so combining the two kind of felt like a no-brainer. It's quite an American flavor. Rebecca's voice sounds dubious at best. Trent is fairly sure he's never baked with peanut butter. One of our big hits. I keep a jar on my kitchen counter at all times. And the texture doesn't get claggy. Well, that's a technical term I've never heard before, so I can't make any promises. But this little cake has never steered me wrong, and I'm hoping it won't this time. I haven't finished on the buttercream, or else I'd give you a taste.
I think we both look forward to it. Rebecca still sounds unconvinced. Ted gives them a thumbs up and gets back to mixing.
Who are you worried about in terms of performance? Sharon Fieldstone pauses after the question and leans forward a bit, as if she actually cares about what Trent has to say and not like she's getting paid to pull out the juiciest quotes for the editing team. After a season of working with her, Trent knows how good she is. She can get the perfect turn of phrase without needing multiple takes, and so he doesn't mind her tactics. That much. Jane's tried and true was more style than substance, and her blind bake was right in the middle of the pack. Is there anything she can do to save herself? Focus in on the fundamentals with these cakes, but I think once again she's bitten off more than she can chew by including sugar work on the first challenge. Anyone else? Rupert. His flavors were disappointing. She's opening her mouth, no doubt to ask him to expand, so he keeps on going. I'm not convinced by the ones he's doing this round. Yuzu, white chocolate, and coconut will be a delicate balance. And his silence can speak for itself. What about Jamie? Both of his cakes were technically flawless, Trent says without hesitation. It's impressive for someone his age to have that level of instinct. He could pump up the flavors a bit. He needs to provide some criticism, even for the better bakers. He has a reputation to uphold. You and Rebecca spent a lot of time with Ted. His blind bake was not the best showing. Ted's been... He pauses, considering what he's seen over the last 24 hours, the low-level annoyance he felt after the last round of judging, and starts again. There's a lot of potential there, like with all of our bakers, but he hasn't been that focused, and it's impacting his bakes. If he got that focus, do you think? Do I think he'd do better? Yes. He seems like he could be a solid baker. I'm not sure he has what it takes to go all the way, though. As soon as he says it, Trent knows that's what Sharon was looking for, the line that was beyond mere platitude, the line that'll get spliced into the broadcast. It's not the most callous thing he said on the show, not by a long shot. It's just a perfectly true observation, a statement of fact. Still, he wishes he'd phrased it better. "You know," Sharon says, after the cameras are down, "Ted lost almost a quarter of an hour on the blind bake because he was helping Shannon with her oven." He did not know that. He knows it now. When Beard announces that Nate won, the praline buttercream he made was truly excellent, no denying that. The bakers all seem overjoyed. Even Roy gives him a nod. "This means I have the absolutely awful job of saying goodbye to one of you. And that person is..." Keeley pauses and looks over the assembled bakers. Trent already knows who is going to be eliminated, of course. It hadn't been a question for him, personally, and Rebecca and Higgins had both agreed. Rupert. His buttercream had a grainy quality to it, and his bake had tasted almost perfumed. Trent had needed to take a second bite of Sam's matcha cake to chase the flavor out of his mouth. Jane hadn't been able to complete the sugar work she'd promised, but the cake itself had a good crumb, and the gin flavor hadn't been too overpowering. And Ted's final cake had been fine. Good, even. Peanut butter will always be gummy, in Trent's opinion, but the cake itself had been moist, and the berry buttercream had been exactly what a frosting should be. Still, just because he knows doesn't mean that watching the bakers wait to hear is necessarily fun. Florence murmurs something to May. Jamie is staring at his hands. Even Ted isn't smiling. "Rupert, I'm so sorry." Sam puts a hand on Rupert's shoulder, but he just shrugs it off. Trent normally gives the departing baker a brief hug. "It humanizes you," Lucy had told him when they first were figuring out that bit of filming, "and God knows you need it." And a few words of advice for the camera to pick up. But in this case, he'll just stick to the advice. And then he's off to hug Nate, who looks a little stunned by the whole thing. Rebecca makes a comment about wanting the recipe for the praline buttercream, and the man lets out a noise that's somewhere between a laugh and a groan. And after Nate, it's a few minutes of standing around so that the assistant director can get some good shots of the bakers basking in their first completed episode. He congratulates Colin on the blind bake, listens and nods as Florence tells him how nervous she was. Ted's next to her. "Quite a day, huh? Poor Rupert. Would have enjoyed getting to pick his brain more." "It's very noble of you to be so concerned about the others." Ted shrugs. "Oh, I know I'm only a small part of all this." Ted gestures around at the tent. "Besides, I've never hugely concerned myself with winning or losing. I'm here because it sounded like a fantastic opportunity to learn more about baking. And to try to figure out why you British love orange and chocolate, because that is a flavor combination I am still not fully convinced of." It's too bad that none of the cameras are right by them. Sharon would kill someone for that sort of sound clip. Beneath the humor, there's something almost vulnerable to what Ted's told him, something beyond the usual clichés of, I want to make my family proud, or I want to show everyone that I really do know how to make bread. Before Trent has to figure out the appropriate response, someone bumps into Ted. Trent takes it as an opportunity to maneuver himself away. He'll stand by what he told Sharon earlier, if anyone asks, but he will admit that Ted is not casual about baking. Not by a long shot. Chapter 2. Biscuits. Everyone loves Biscuit Week. It's a law. Or, that's what Keely claims. She's ended up next to him as they get their makeup done for filming. Trent's a little concerned by how much energy she has. It's barely 7 in the morning, and she's already told him all the hot gossip about the bakers that she and Beard have somehow learned, as he sits there, drinking a cup of lukewarm tea. Some of the things Trent has learned while he's stuck in the makeup chair. Shannon is in her second year at university for chemical engineering. Roy has already threatened to break some body part of Jamie's on 3 separate occasions. Jamie finds it hilarious to call Roy Grandpa. May has multiple tattoos. Ted has a son who lives back in the States, in Kansas. Sam and Roy had offered to help wash up the bowls after filming last week. Ted hates tea. You must be excited, she says, after telling him that Colin loves Little Mix. For Biscuit Week. Everybody loves Biscuit Week. I like all weeks equally. Keely laughs at that, as if he said something that was actually funny. But for real, biscuits make people happy. It's impossible to be upset when you're eating one. I read that somewhere. Although that might be hard for you, seeing you're all... Keely makes a face, scrunching up her nose and waving her hands around. You know, all that. I'll make sure to be a bit less all that. And make everyone think that you fell and hit your head? Nah, it'd give Higgins a fit. Still, Keely does have a point. People love biscuits. Trent won't tell anyone, but he's willing to be a bit more lenient in his judging this week compared to some of the others. Bread, pastry. He wouldn't go as far as to praise a badly baked biscuit, because that would ruin the spirit of the show, but he can pull himself back a little from his automatic need to find a flaw and wiggle it out. And he can attempt some sort of a smile as Keely and Beard introduce this week's tried-and-true round. As it turns out, Trent is actually looking forward to judging this round. He's always enjoyed Florentines, and even a bad one isn't terrible. His teeth ache a little as he thinks about how much sugar he's going to consume, but there's not much he can do about that. Sam is first up to their table. Trent can tell just by looking at his bake that they're going to be too brittle. The addition of sour cherry was a nice touch, but not quite good enough, and he tells Sam that. Nate has gone with chai again. It was better in the fruitcake. Shannon's mango chunks are too big. So far, the promise of Florentines is fading. Ted is next.
Howdy.
His Florentines look textbook, as identical as is possible given the lacy edges, the chocolate neatly feathered. But Trent knows how looks can be deceiving when it comes to baking. The color on these is perfect. They look like something I would see in a store, Rebecca's saying. They look like they'll make a big crack, Keely adds. Trent reaches out and snaps one of the Florentines. The noise it makes is nothing short of crisp, and out of the corner of his eye, he can see Rebecca smile. He pops half into his mouth. His teeth meet the ideal amount of resistance, and then... he doesn't even like salted caramel that much, but the way it melts into his mouth, mixed with a hint of golden syrup, stuns him into a second of silence. "They look flawless, and they taste even better," Rebecca says. "The use of pecans to add texture, that was gorgeous." "Trent, you're awfully quiet. Is your jaw stuck together?" His fingers snap the piece he's still holding in half. "Excellent job." That's far from the only thing he has to say on the matter. These biscuits are truly flawless in terms of flavor, structure, bake, texture. "You should be very proud of these. It's a truly beautiful biscuit." "Cookie. But thank you." Trent wonders how long Ted has been waiting to make a comment about the cookie-biscuit distinction. It's like what Rebecca had said last week. The mustache really creates certain expectations for loud and obnoxious patriotism. But beyond the accent and the peanut butter, Ted hasn't done anything to draw attention to his country of origin. And even the accent isn't the strongest that Trent's heard. He's almost tempted to comment on it, but Beard beats him to it. It'll be a fun bit of back and forth for the viewers, he's sure. Next, they go to Jane, whose bake is much too gooey. No snap whatsoever. After they finished their judging, he finds himself circling back to Ted's bench. "Trent Krim, what can I do you for?" he says the first thing that comes to mind. "I was wondering if I could have another one of your Florentines." He can feel Rebecca and Sharon's eyebrows raising in his direction, or Rebecca's would be if it weren't for the Botox. "It's for my daughter. She's going through a salted caramel phase," Trent adds quickly. That is a lie. Kieran is 2 weeks shy of 4, and the only food phase she could be described as having is one for jelly babies and ketchup. Ted grins at him. "I'll tell you what, I'll put half a dozen aside for her. Make a little box for the young Miss Krim. How does that sound?" "If I give her 6 biscuits, neither of us will be getting any sleep tonight." "It's a rite of passage. What's her name? I'll write her a note telling her that she can have 5 and no more." "Kieran. And that's really not..." "I bet she's a real cutie patootie." Trent's suddenly aware of how long the two have been talking. How it must look. A judge and contestant chatting alone between the scenes. Higgins will have a conniption. Sharon will have questions. He feels his shoulders stiffen at the thought. "No need for a note, just the biscuits are fine. Someone from production can get them to me." Ted's grin falters. "Will do, Susie Sue." One of the PAs hands him a little green cardboard box less than 10 minutes later. Trent is getting his hair touched up. No thanks to the British summer humidity. And Beard is in the seat next to him. Beard nods at the box. "Good biscuits?" "Not bad." Trent's not even seeing Kieran until Monday, thanks to filming. He'll just have to keep the Florentines in the hotel's mini-fridge. Or he'll just eat them himself during the drive back to London. That's the more realistic option. It's not like Kieran would appreciate them yet. He's still working on her palate, and she is resistant to his efforts at the best of times. The response to having to make 2 dozen fig rolls is, well, mixed, according to Keeley. Some of the bakers, Sam, Shannon, Colin, found the idea of recreating something that they had only ever had a supermarket version of quite unsettling. Jamie Tart, in contrast, had said that he thought the blind bake was supposed to be hard. "Did he now?" Rebecca asks. Her voice is calm, and Trent knows how much fun she's going to have criticizing him later in the day. Has he made them before? "No," Keeley draws out the word. "But he said he's eaten so many of them that it's basically the same." "Fucking prick." She sounds almost fond. Rebecca takes a sip of tea. Keeley and Beard aren't needed for all of the blind bake, and have decided to join him and Rebecca for a bit of a break. Anyone else shaking in their boots? "You know I can't tell you that." Beard raises an eyebrow. Everyone knows that Keeley Jones is the worst gossip among the crew. If she wasn't so quick on her feet, so good at getting contestants to loosen up, so excellent at playing off of Beard's odd stoicism, her contract would not have been renewed on the grounds of professionalism. "Not sober, at least." "Yes, that sounds more like her." For a few minutes, they all sit in silence. Trent doesn't mind the quiet with these three. During the first season, especially the first few weeks, he had felt distinctly awkward when they had to sit around between takes. Presenters, as a whole, are just a bit too polished. It's almost impossible to tell what's real and what isn't with them. And he and Rebecca, there was a time almost a decade ago where she truly did not like him, when he got the baking column over her at Metro, but subsequent collaborations and joint TV appearances have mostly eased that tension. The fact that he got fired from that position at Metro after less than 6 months, due to a real dust-up with the editor-in-chief, probably helped as well. But 10 weeks in the English countryside in close proximity for hours each day will bring people together. Trent's still not sure he will ever quite understand Beard, but then again, he doesn't think anyone will. Even with that caveat, he enjoys these moments of not filming with them. He takes a sip of his tea and waits for the silence to break. He's not quite as good as Sharon at waiting, but he can be patient. "Trent, do we need to start calling Bagsies on bakes?" Keeley asks. As it turns out, he didn't have to wait too long. "That information wasn't in my contract." It's truly amazing how little Beard's face moves, even when he's speaking. Trent gives Rebecca a dirty look, but she ignores him. Honestly, he should ignore all of them, tell them that they are being extremely childish, but that would make it look like he did something wrong, and he did not. Ted's bake was solid. Trent was appreciating it. He would do the same with any of the other bakers. In fact, he'll ask to take a half dozen of the winning blind bake home as well, and he hasn't eaten a fig roll willingly since his university days. "You'll have to ask Higgins, I guess." "But Trent, why? Are they not feeding you enough?" "It was for Kieran." That's enough to change the subject. Trent spends the rest of the break showing them pictures of his daughter, telling Keeley that yes, he will consider buying Kieran a toddler-sized pumpkin costume, and admitting to Rebecca that no, he and Rory have not given much thought to where she'll be going to primary school, because that's still over a year away. After Keeley and Beard are called back to chat with, i.e. annoy, the bakers for the last 20 minutes of the challenge, Rebecca turns to him. "I didn't know that 3-year-olds were big on salted caramel." Trent takes great pleasure in telling her to fuck off. Which means that in first place, Trent doesn't need to listen to Beard to know that Roy Kent has won the technical. He is perfectly capable of using the process of elimination to figure out the blind bake winner, even at this stage of the game, even though Roy is the only one of the bakers to actually understand that he shouldn't let his emotions be parading across his face. Roy doesn't seem particularly enthused to hear that he won. In fact, he looks deeply irritated. He looked deeply irritated when he heard that Shannon was in last and that Jane was in 11th, and so on, all the way up to Jamie Tart being in second place. Both he and Rebecca were irritated about that. Trent is starting to think that deep irritation may just be Roy Kent's permanent state of being. The bakers all come up to collect their fig rolls, and Trent remembers the promise he made to himself. "Can you give me a second, Roy?" Trent calls out. "Ooh, Kent's in trouble!" The look that Roy shoots Jamie makes Trent regret the whole thing. "I was wondering if I could grab a few of your biscuits." Roy is staring at him like Trent's grown a second head. "For my daughter. She really loves fig rolls, and yours were the best." "Yeah, fine. But I'm not going to fucking wrap them up like Lasso did." Roy grabs four of the rolls and puts them right on the table. Trent is pretty sure the choice to put them just inches away from one of the napkins is deliberate. "Enjoy." Trent isn't sure who came up with the idea to make a 3D biscuit scene for the week's final challenge, but whichever member of production is responsible really deserves a raise. Even though all the bakers can, and should, practice the bakes ahead of time, they all look a little stunned when Beard runs through the parameters of the challenge. It is a lot. Must have an element that's at least 25 centimeters tall. Must have at least two types of dough and at least four different objects. As soon as Beard finishes speaking, the entire tent is a flurry of movement. Trent feels almost bad when he has to interrupt each baker to ask the usual round of questions. Almost. It is his job, after all. All the bakers are on edge. Will spills his molasses twice in the first 5 minutes. It was the same way last year, Trent remembers. In the first week, the bakers still have the excitement of being here that propels them forward, while the second week, they know that people actually are going home, and that knowledge can create nerves, and nerves can create human error. Yes, everyone might love Biscuit Week, like Keeley says, but it can also reveal some real cracks. They bypass Will. For all of Higgins's competence as a producer, he does genuinely like to avoid putting the contestants through any real anguish, even though his bench should be first. So it's Sam that they start with. "I wanted to memorialize my first apartment from university," he tells them, pulling out a drawing that is meticulously detailed. "It was very small, but it was the first time that I was responsible for a place. Also, I've always wanted to build a miniature balcony." Roy is even more taciturn than usual. Even Keeley can't get more than a few words out of him. Post-production will have fun with that. Jamie comes next. He has no idea that Rebecca is smarting from his comment from the blind bake, because as he walks them through his gingerbread bus with macaron wheels, he's grinning and pleased with himself. "But is a single bus really a scene?" Rebecca presses. Jamie's face falls. "Just something to ponder," she adds, and then asks him a series of rapid-fire questions about the structural integrity of gingerbread that leaves even Trent wanting to wince a little. "That felt good," she murmurs, as they head to Shannon's bench. When they reach Ted's bench, he gives them a smile, as always. He does not, this time, offer them any bowls of batter to try. Why don't you tell us about your bake? 2 summers ago, I did a bit of a road trip with my son. You know, the whole family bonding in a car whose air conditioning didn't fully work and introducing him to the joys of John Cougar Mellencamp thing. Tad's smile shifts a little. It's not the big beam that's usually present, but it feels realer somehow. We went to the Grand Canyon, so I'm making that.
The Grand Canyon?
No, but I could see how you could think that. It's going to be the car and the road in the desert. Oh, and me and Henry, of course.
Trent takes it that Henry is Ted's son.
What will the car be made of? Gingerbread, infused with some extra cinnamon. I thought giving it a bit of an extra kick would be appropriate because it's hot in Arizona and all. And different shortbreads for the road and various dessert accoutrements. And brandy snaps for Henry and me.
Well, it sounds like you have quite a bit to get through. We'll leave you to it.
Ted gives them a salute. The wider smile is back on his face. Ted's second to last to get comments, and Trent almost feels bad for him. At this point, Trent is as near to sick of gingerbread as he can be. His daughter will just have to grow up without the stuff. He isn't sure what else he can say about gingerbread. With Shannon and Collins Bakes, most of his comments had been about the consistency of royal icing, for God's sake. But when Ted steps forward, Trent knows that he won't have any issues figuring out what to say. The scene in front of him is undeniably well done. The car perfectly proportional, the road beneath it looking stunningly realistic for shortbread. Ted had even managed to have one of the car doors open and...
Are those mini biscuit CDs?
Keeley's gasp is exactly the right response. Thought it was an appropriate detail.
It's almost a shame to touch this, Trent tells him.
But you're going to do it anyways?
Trent breaks off a piece of the open car door in response. It isn't technically perfect, a hair too dry for his tastes, but that extra kick of cinnamon brushes away any possible complaints, makes him catch his breath. He reaches for one of the shortbread cactuses next. There's lime in them, and it mixes with the remnants of the cinnamon and ginger in a way that shouldn't be good, but it is. It's one of the best biscuits Trent has had all day. His fingers itch to take another piece. Instead, he forces himself to focus and listen to Rebecca's feedback so that he doesn't repeat her. It's not a question, in the end, of a winner. Jamie's bus is irritatingly good, as are all of Jamie's bakes this week, and May's Arcade, the definition of unexpected, is the combination of intricate and well-baked that is catnip to Rebecca. But Ted's is just a level beyond. It was the addition of the cinnamon, and the mini biscuit CDs, and the brandy snap father and son, and the wedding cake cookie rocks. It was all of it. When Keeley announces the win, the reaction from the other bakers is nothing short of exuberant. Florence has an arm around Ted, and Colin has thrown himself across 2 other bakers to give him a hug. Ted's laughing and shaking his head. Congratulations, he tells Ted, after the elimination's been wrapped up, and he's given Jane the usual words of encouragement for a departing baker. It was an excellent day for you, all around.
That means a lot, coming from you.
Trent has heard that many times, more times than he can count. But from Ted, it feels the closest to earnest that it's ever been, one of the nicest compliments he's gotten in quite a while. I know winning isn't why you applied, but you should still be proud. The smile on Ted's face is that smaller one, the one that had been there when he was talking about his son.
He opens his mouth, but before he can say anything, Will has grabbed Ted's arm, and Ted turns. It's only when Trent is back at his trailer that he realizes that he'd somehow forgotten his customary, albeit usually utterly awkward, hug with the winner. That's fine. He doesn't mind.